Where is today? There it is. Welcome, everybody, to the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. For the record, it's April 17th, 2007. And we're going to start off with a public hearing on Senate Bill 909. So we'll open that. Patrick and Senator, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 909 specifies that a public utility makes sales of electricity may now establish a rate for any service that provides a public utility with a rate return exceeding 4.5%. Mr. Chair, if you prefer, I have a lengthy explanation that's on my SMS, which is available on all this. I could just defer to the Senator to talk about the bill instead, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Senator Ted Farioli, District 30. And as Mr. Brennan has said, I'm happy to provide the lengthy and boring major summary that's for the bill before you. But all kidding aside, this is a relatively serious issue for me, and I hope it is for other people in Oregon. Ratepayers are watching the numbers go up on the their utility bills, and they're not very happy about it. And when we look around for accountabilities and those things that might cap increases and help them make ends meet, and keep the cost low, there are relatively few tools that are available to folks. So I brought a bill that I think takes the issue head on, Senate Bill 909, and just FYI, colleagues on the committee, it establishes limitations on how much of the rate of return can be for investor-owned utility. It proposes that charges not exceed a certain percentage of the utility customer's costs. It basically says that the public purpose charge should not exceed a total set in 2015. It says that Energy Trust of Oregon employees shall not be paid more than the governor. And as a matter of fact, currently the Energy Trust employees, some of them are paid in multiples of the governor's salary currently. And that their benefits should not exceed 25% of their base salaries. It also suggests that the Klamath Dam removal, if it is not started by January 1st, 2018, then the dam removal surcharge will be discontinued, and the funds collected shall be returned to pro rata basis to ratepayers with interest. Those dollars are piling up, and we may be in litigation on the dam removals for quite some time. And it seems that because of some policy changes in Washington, D.C., there may not be the alignment that once existed for dam removal there. So there's an open question about whether we ever get there. The investor-owned utilities also would be prohibited from increasing rates to pay for any Superfund cleanup expenses. One of the interesting things that we've determined connected with dam removal is that sometimes the materials that are caught behind the dams turn out to be toxic in nature and have to be removed. And we don't think that that's necessarily a good charge for ratepayers who had no idea that they might be on the hook for that to have to pay. And also that the revolving door between policy folks and IOU, investor-owned utilities, and regulators, that revolving door should be wedged shut for at least 2 years. And so this bill would also require a 2-year cooling off period before people who have been employed by investor-owned utilities could serve on the Public Utility Commission. It's an omnibus bill, has a lot of moving parts. But they really are all aimed at the same sort of thing. Affordability of energy is really important for Oregonians. We used to consider access to low-cost hydroelectric power as the Oregon advantage. Some of the industrial users of power would argue that it's not the great advantage that it used to be. In fact, it may be just an open-ended set of costs that they are absorbing. They also are looking at rate hikes that are being proposed from between 5.6% increase this year for residential customers, and other customers could see as much as a 7.1% hike. That matters because we're having trouble with affordability of housing. Obviously, utility rates fall the hardest on the people that are the least able to pay, and that tends to be those without means. So we're interested in providing some protections. And again, the we're looking at providing some sort of limitations on ancillary charges. For instance, the Energy Trust gets about 3% for the public purpose charge. That has created $146 million in revenue for the Energy Trust of Oregon in 2015. That's a lot of money. It's taken from ratepayers. It's supposed to be dedicated to needful purposes in energy conservation, et cetera. When we look at the Department of Energy's record on energy conservation projects, it's not a good one. We think that the Energy Trust dollars, that fund should be capped, and that any excess funds should be used to help Oregonians reduce their energy costs. That's become quite a burden for folks. Also, we wonder if folks are aware that the executive director of the Energy Trust draws about $214,000 in base compensation, and that six of the employees there are above $140,000. That's more than the governor makes. So we thought that that would, you know, perhaps there's some propriety or maybe even a little perspective that's been lacking. Back to the Klamath Dam removal project, that's a $450 million project at current estimates. That is cost is to be split between the investor-owned utility and ratepayers in California and Oregon. That is one of the situations where perhaps we ought to rethink that removal altogether. I don't believe the ratepayers were given a choice as to whether they wanted to partner to the tune of about $116 million from for their ratepayers. So there are other issues, but that's enough for us to catalyze a lively and interesting discussion. Mr. Chairman, I wait for your questions and those of the committee.
Omnibus is a good term.
Yeah.
Questions of the senator? None?
Mr. Chairman, I to your last comment, a relating clause relating to utility regulation.
Yeah, good relating, good relating clause.
Overview of that which in Oregon should be more tightly regulated. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All righty. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank
Most
you.
Appreciate it. Is folks. There anybody else who would like to address Senate Bill 909? Please.
Irene Gilbert, the Grand Oregon. I didn't sign up to comment on this, but I did send in some testimony. I strongly support Senate Bill 909. I think that putting some controls on the cost of utilities in this state really will benefit the most needy in the state. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Irene. Anybody else? All righty. Well, we only had it posted for public hearing, so we will close public hearing on Senate Bill 909. And I think we will, since we have people who want to talk on both 170 and 177, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bills 170 and 177, as that works. We'll open that up. And Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I can give
you a quick rundown. Senate Bill 170 extends the sunset for the tax credit for energy conservation projects for 6 years to extend that sunset to January 1st, 2024. And Senate Bill 177 extends its sunset for the tax credits for construction or installation of residential alternative energy devices from 2018 to 2024. So both measures have subsequent referrals to Joint Committee on Tax Credits. The 177 has a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment essentially conforms the bill to the version, to the House version of Senate Bill 177, which has already been sent on to the Tax Credits Committee, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Let's see. Irene, you're up again.
Irene Gilbert, LeGrand, Oregon, and I just signed up for Senate Bill 177. I'm in support of the amendment to this bill. I was very pleased to see this amendment. As you are all very well aware, tax incentives are not free money. They are a loan that must be paid back through increased taxes paid by citizens of the state. I support incentives that provide a positive return for the investment of public money required to support them. In this case, providing incentives for devices that will conserve energy and provide support for citizen investment in small alternative energy devices makes a lot of sense, as long as there are strict criteria and reporting which documents that the public is getting a positive return on their investment. The amended bill builds in accountability and meets the trust, the test of trust but verify, that the tax incentives being issued are being appropriately managed also. Had this type of accountability been included in previous tax incentives, I do not believe that the problems with the Oregon Department of Energy would have reached the magnitude that they have. I urge you to support the amended Senate Bill 177. I do not support the original version introduced, and I hope that you look at, with all tax incentives, building in more accountability and reporting in the future and limiting the amount of those tax incentives. Thank you.
Thank you, Irene. We've become well known to each other over the last year. Talked a lot.
I don't have opinions, however.
You do have opinions. Strongly held and well articulated. All righty. Let's see. It looks like Jerry Page and Jeremy Anderson. Gentlemen? You're signed up on both of them, so feel free to talk about both, but it would be helpful if you would articulate your comments for each one, identify what you commented on, okay?
Okay. Thanks for your time this afternoon. My name is Jeremy Anderson. I work with WISE. We are a trade association of weatherization contractors, distributors, and manufacturers. It's probably easiest to get the RETC out of the way first, so Senate Bill 177. As you've heard, the House version is already on its way to JTAC, so we can keep this hopefully brief. It is an excellent program. Predominantly, we see this being used to help, so we say, moderate to lower income homeowners and renters put in new heating systems like ductless heat pumps. These specifically work best in smaller houses with very high heat bills, where often we can see people with, say, an 800 or 1,000 square foot house reduce their heat bill from a couple hundred dollars a month to tens of dollars a month. Cost the state relatively little. It's a very excellent program, and I would urge your support as it goes forward. What I'd really like to talk about today is Senate Bill 170 and the Energy Conservation Program, or the EIP, and specifically the Small Premium Project portion of that. The Small Premium Projects, or the SPI, comprise the vast, vast majority of the program in numbers of projects. However, less than $1 million a year in actual dollars. So these are all the very small projects that go through in high numbers. The program is designed, as it's called, the small, which I think we've talked about, capped at $7,000 a year in tax credits, $20,000 a year of expenses for the program, or expenses of the project. But it specifies the most premium projects. So the Department of Energy has identified projects that have been done over the years with excellent track records. These are things like attic insulation, where we know that they are cost-effective pretty much every single time. And they set an incentive per square foot, so it's well within the caps. And they take essentially the best projects out there and provide a streamlined path for those. Where we see these being used predominantly is in rental housing. So these are situations where tenants have almost no control over their heat bills. And what this program does is it allows property owners, landlords, to leverage state money, or actually allows the state to leverage homeowner or tenant, excuse me, landlord's money to reduce their heat bills. And again, these typically go after the worst of the worst. So these are tenants who have often hundreds of dollars per month in utility bills, where we can go in using the SIFI program and reduce their bills often by half, maybe two-thirds, sometimes significantly more. These are very low cost to the state, but with a huge impact. And as I said, the vast majorities, at least that we work with or are familiar with, go for rental housing, where we can lower the cost of living for tenants. This is the equivalent of a couple hundred dollar a month drop in their lease payments, because we're reducing the cost of living through their utility bills. Not all of the projects go toward rental housing, though. There's one that I think is a nice illustration of how premium these projects are. There is a small rural charter school in Polk County right now that we're discussing a project with. Currently heats with a diesel burner. They spend $9,000 a year burning diesel to keep kids warm. There's zero attic insulation in this building. It was built about 100 years ago. In short, it's a disaster. Our project proposal that we're looking at right now would cost the state about $11,000 in foregone tax credits. It would save this particular school about $7,000 a year in heating costs, help keep kids warm. It would get them cooling at the same time. And over the course of the project, the life of the project, should save about 120,000 gallons of diesel being burned. These are premium projects, and without this tax credit, they don't happen. With that, thank you for your time, and I'd be very happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, sir.
Hi, my name is Jerry Page, and for the last 42 years, I've had Total Comfort Weatherization based here in Salem, and we specialize in weatherizing existing properties. I'm tired. I've done it 42 years. I'm about ready to quit, so I'm not here to feather my nest. But I really do want to kind of expand on a human level of what Jeremy's talking about. So two programs, a small premium project. I think it's capped at $1 million. I don't think the state's ever paid out $1 million in a year to keep this program going. It's designed to help encourage landlords to weatherize properties, their rental units. And typically, they don't pay the heating costs. The tenant does. And I know the governor and the legislature is concerned about affordable housing. This is very much part of that affordable housing issue. I have sat in hundreds of homes and apartments telling people, you know, what they need to cut down their utility bills. Landlords have roofs, parking lot, painting, refrigerator, carpets, you name it. Weatherization isn't even in their top 10 of their priorities for their budgets. And over the last few decades, we have been successful at convincing owners that it will increase their value, that if they combine the tax credit and the incentives they get from the energy trust, it's an affordable thing to do. And if you just look at the numbers, it is. But I'll tell you, on the average, it takes my company about 3.5 years from the initial contact before that apartment owner actually gets it into his budget to get it done. So this is a very long-term project. To cut it now, you're going to put us back a long ways, or put the industry back. So it's very cost-effective. It does a lot of good for mostly low and middle-income homeowners, or apartment renters, excuse me. For homeowners, there's the ductless heat pumps primarily is what we're involved with. And that carries over into the rental units, but it also carries over into the low and moderate income homeowners that usually live in older, smaller houses. I don't know if you know about ductless heat pumps, but they are ultra efficient, and it is not an exaggeration to cut their heating bill 50% or more just with the installation of these ductless heat pumps. So anyway, just wanted to kind of bring it home. It helps a lot of Oregonians at a very small price. So please don't throw the baby out with the bathwater when you're talking about tax credits. The gentleman before talked about the Department of Energy maybe having some issues with some tax credits. I don't think there has been any issues with these small premium projects. So thank you, sir.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, gentlemen. That's all I had signed up to testify on 170 and 177. Anybody else want to testify? Okay, we will close the public hearing on those. Colleagues, these are our two tax credit bills two of them. I think they may be the only two that we have this session. The process is we have to, if we choose to, move them down to the Joint Tax Credit Committee where they will look at them from the tax perspective. In both cases, what this is doing is extending the sunset. My inclination, we'll see where we're at, is let's just move them down there without recommendation. I think the House has already moved them. We just frankly did not spend enough time on them to know whether we want to make a recommendation or not. So with that, Mr. Vice Chair, we'll open the work session on Senate Bill 170.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 170 without recommendation to the Joint Tax Credit Committee.
Okay. The Senator has moved Senate Bill 170 to the Joint Committee on Tax
Credits.
I'm trying to remember to get the full name there. The Tax Credit Committee, without recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Motion is adopted. We'll open a hearing on Senate Bill 177.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 177.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 177 to the Joint...
The dash one.
With the dash... Oh, the dash one.
Dash one.
Okay.
I move the dash one.
You move the dash ones. We've got that. So we have a motion to adopt the dash ones on the table. Is there any objection to that motion? That motion is adopted. Senator.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 177 with the dash one, with no recommendation to the Joint Tax Credit Committee.
Okay. Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 177 as amended by the Dash 1 amendments to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits without recommendation. Any objection to that? It's adopted. Okay, we'll move on. Let's go down here. So we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 99. Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 99 requires Senate confirmation of the director for the State Department of Energy. We heard this bill last Wednesday. The measure has no amendments. It has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact, Mr. Chair. So the bill is...
All righty. So we're in work session.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 99 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 99... to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I would just note for the record that I think we may have already done this as part of another bill, but it doesn't do it twice. Discussion. Is there any opposition, Senator?
Yeah, I'm just refreshing my memory. I believe the testimony was that the governor supports this move.
The governor does support this move.
Okay. This bill's at her request.
Is that her request?
Yeah.
Is there any opposition? Seeing none, Senate 99 is adopted. And since Senator Monroe had such interest in it, we'll let him carry it.
Okay.
Okay, we're closed on that. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 121.
So Senate Bill 121, we heard this bill on the 5th of April. It directs TriMet to study the feasibility of extending its Max Light Rail system westward of the cities of Cornelius and Forest Grove. With no amendments before, Mr. Chair, the bill as it written has been issued a fiscal light hall pass statement to allow it to go to Ways and Means and a statement of no revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 121 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 121 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition on the motion?
I'm no.
Senator...
I'm
just checking. Anybody else?
Sorry.
Okay. That motion is adopted with Senator Thompson in opposition. We'll close on that. We'll open on Senate Bill work session on Senate Bill 313.
Okay. Senate Bill 313, Mr. Chair. We heard this bill on a week ago today. Senate Bill 313 rather directs the arts program of the Oregon Business Development Department to conduct a study on issues related to outcomes of arts education. We have since that time received the amendment that was discussed at the hearing. Mr. Chair, the Dash 2 amendment creates a task force on equitable access to arts education, which replaces the original measure. That task force would sunset on June 30th, 2019, and the measure would take effect on the 91st day following adjournment sine die. With the Dash 2 amendment, Mr. Chair, the measure has a fiscal statement that's been issued and a statement of no revenue impact. This measure did come to us with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means issued by the Senate President, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 313.
Senator Thompson has moved the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 313. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? There is none. It's adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 313 with a Dash 2 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 313 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? You want to be...
He wants to carry.
He wants to carry? Is that what he's raising his hand for? Senator Girard, the motion is adopted. Senator Girard is in opposition. We'll close on that. Now we get a confusing one. Senate Bill 339.
Mr. Chair.
Carry that one.
Which one? Well, we don't have to. It's going to Joint Ways and Means.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 339. We heard Senate Bill 339 way back in February, on the 20th of February. This measure caps electricity generated by any single biomass facility that may be used to meet the requirement that a certain percent of electricity in the state be generated by small-scale renewable energy projects or biomass facilities. The measure has an emergency clause that would take effect upon passage. We have on OLIS...
Two amendments,
Mr. Chair. So the Dash 2 amendment, if I may pull out that sheet, Mr. Chair, the Dash 2 amendment references renewable energy sources as defined in ORS 469A.025 in Section 1 sub 2 sub A, and also clarifies language in Section 1 sub 3 regarding single facility nameplate capacity. Is that all we're describing, Mr. Chair? Or do we want to discuss the Dash 3?
Can we adopt the Dash 2s?
Mr. Chair, I can tell you that we have not received a statement of fiscal.
The Dash 3s.
We've not received a statement of fiscal impact for the Dash 3s. However, this being the last day for work sessions, Mr. Chair, that we have a method, but we could provide. I provide you a script for a rule suspension, which would allow the committee to suspend that rule and adopt the Dash 2s without the fiscal impact statement for purposes of taking action on it. Before we make the motion, I should just make a blanket comment that says that this motion would to suspend that rule. It requires two-thirds, so four aye votes to pass this motion.
And what's the differences between the 2s and the 3s?
I'm not sure I'm entirely prepared to speak to the differences between the 2s and the 3s. In particular, the 3s reference renewable energy sources, and also they just take slightly different language. You may have somebody in the audience who might be better suited at describing the difference between the 2s and the 3s than me at this time. So they're...
Ms. Penwell, would you like to...
All right, Amanda's there.
Amanda?
I think Amanda's.
Well, let's see.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, Amanda Wells, I'm here on behalf of the Community Renewable Energy Association, the Dash and the Oregon Association of Oregon Counties. The Dash 3s before you do essentially what the Dash 2s do. The only difference is they also ensure that your cogeneration facilities are also qualified renewable. So that's what those kind of five bolded words look like on the end of page one. And so what we're doing is not only making sure that the projects under 20 megawatts are essentially RPS eligible or qualified renewable, we're also making sure that the cogeneration facilities, which was inserted in as additional section during 1547, also are qualified under the RPS.
Okay. Someone from the utility want to address the concern? I understand there were some concerns about that. Is there a disagreement with Ms. Dalton's explanation?
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bronner Seaman with Portland General Electric. We believe that the Dash 2s are more in keeping with what the agreement was at the end of the 16 session for a fix. We think that the Dash 3s change a little bit what the definition is in terms of eligible resources and narrow it somewhat beyond what was in 1547 and beyond the fix that was agreed to.
And what's the impact of that?
It narrows, we believe it actually narrows a little bit what counts towards this 8% target by restricting it to just RPS-eligible resources as opposed to a broader set of resources. We think it actually shifts a little bit what the definition is. So it makes it harder to meet this 8% target by narrowing the resources that are available for it.
Oh, it's more. You're saying the Dash 3s are more restrictive?
That's our belief on it, yeah, because it's only RPS eligible. That's my understanding of it at this point, trying to catch up with this on the fly a little bit.
Oh, let's get the PUC. Jason, you want to take a shot at that?
I'm glad it was not the only
one. I mean, I want to be clear because we thought we had it right with 1547.
Mr. Chair, Jason Eisdorfer, Public Utility Commission. The Dash 2s are the ones that we looked at most recently, and we felt comfortable with that. I'm not sure I'm actually prepared to speak to the Dash 3s now.
Are you PUC's most comfortable with the Dash 2s?
That's the ones we looked at, yes.
Chair Beyer and members of the committee, Amanda Dalton, for the record, if I may. The Dash 3s were actually at the request of Renewable Northwest, who had seen the Dash 2s and were concerned that by us clarifying that the under 20 megawatt small scale projects had to be RPS qualified, that we were exposing a further hole by allowing the cogeneration facilities not to be qualified.
So that would seem to expand the base rather than contract it. Am I thinking that through wrong?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, our belief is that the RPS eligible resources, as you'll recall, are somewhat narrowly defined. It excludes things like pre-1995 resources. And so as we look at it, if you go to the RPS eligible, because there are certain things which are would meet the qualifying renewables definition, but there are some date cutoffs and things like that. So we don't see that there's necessarily a problem with cogen in the Dash 2s. So we actually do see that it's narrower.
So I'm remembering the amendment we were trying. This is a Senator Edwards' request was trying to expand it, and you're saying that the Dash 3s narrow it?
That's okay. Chair Beyer, that's our read on it.
Anybody else got any questions?
Just
comment. You look like you have a question.
Well, I don't have a question, but it clearly does narrow it, I believe, and as opposed to expand it, because without that qualifier, more things fit into the definition. So that qualifier does narrow.
Where I was going with this is what the request was to make it consistent with what we did in what we tried to do last session. Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing that it sounds like the Dash 2s are more in keeping with that.
Senator Beyer, I'll try one more time.
One
maybe.
More try?
The 8% is part of the 25% of the RPS. I don't believe it was ever the intent to have the 8% small-scale projects be outside of the RPS projects, meaning qualified projects under the RPS should also be qualified projects under the 8%.
Okay. Alrighty, but I think the last time we talked, the Dash 2s were originally your proposal.
They were, absolutely.
Okay. Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, colleagues, I'm inclined to go with the Dash 2s, if you guys are.
Okay.
So, apparently, we have to do it this way. So, we have to do a separate motion.
Mr. Chair, before we start, this is an undebatable motion, so once a motion's made, we have to vote.
Okay. We can't move the Dash 2. We have to do this first. We have to suspend the rules.
This way?
Yeah.
So you need me to do this? Chair Beyer, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on Senate Bill 339.
The dash twos.
The dash twos, without having the fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand at this time.
Senator Thompson has moved that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on Senate Bill 339, as amended by the dash twos, as will be amended by the dash, without taking the fiscal impact statements on hand at this time. There's no discussion, so is there any opposition to that motion? Seeing none, that motion is adopted. The rules are suspended. Now we can move the dash twos. So.
Mr. Chairman, I move the dash two to Senate Bill 339.
Senator Thompson has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 339. Is there a discussion on that motion? Is there any opposition to that motion? The dash twos are adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 339 with the dash two to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 339 as amended by the dash two amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Senator Trott.
Get my no vote total up.
You're going to work on that no vote, are you? Okay, so the motion is adopted. Senator Girard in opposition, and you want to carry?
Sure.
Senator Thompson will carry. We'll close on that. Let's see, where we go now? Senator Four. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 454. Patrick.
Senate Bill, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 454 directs the Department of Transportation to establish the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area Highway Improvement Program. We heard this bill on March 1st. I believe since March 1st, we received the Dash 1 Amendment. The Dash 1 Amendment specifies that the department may consult with the state of Washington, local governments, and local service districts associated with the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area. It adds on-ramp to westbound lane at exit 47 and improved access to weigh station located at Southeast Frontage Road in Cascade Locks to the minimum improvements under the plan. With the Dash 1 Amendment, Mr. Chair, the measure has a fiscal statement that's been issued and a revenue light statement that's been issued. This measure did come to us with a subsequent from the Committee on Ways and Means, and that is consistent with the impact statements we have, Mr. Chair.
Right. Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 to Senate Bill 454.
Senator Thompson has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 454. Discussion on the motion. Opposition to the motion? There is none. The motion is adopted. Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 454 with a dash one to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 454 as amended by the dash one amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion on that motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Motion is adopted. We'll close on that. We will open on, let's see here, Senate Bill 837.
Okay.
Not doing 538? 538?
Actually, we're just going to move it to rules anyway, so we don't even an explanation.
Oh, absolutely, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I have
move it to rules.
Yeah, I have a script that'll.
You want to do a little one?
I have one, so I'll just give it.
Oh, okay. There's a script.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I expected.
Just go ahead.
Go for it.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 837
without
recommendation and request that the measure be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 837 without recommendation and a request that it be referred to Committee on Rules. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, it is adopted. We'll close on that. And let's see here. We will open on Senate Bill 908.
All right, Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 908. We heard last Wednesday, Senate Bill 908 establishes the Oregon Energy Commission as a policy and rulemaking body for the State Department of Energy, transfers specified duties of the Department of Energy to the Commission, and modifies the general duties of the Department, makes modifications to state energy policy, directs the Department to develop a statewide strategic energy plan, present a draft version of the plan to the Legislative Assembly by September 15, 2019, and directs the Commission to adopt the plan no later than January 1st, 2020, and to periodically update the plan. It requires the Department to provide a biennial Comprehensive Energy Report of the Governor and Legislative Assembly. The measure becomes effective January 1st, 2018, declares emergency effective upon passage. We have the dash one amendment, which makes some slight modifications to the legislative findings in the measure. That is the chair's amendment. With the chair's amendment, the dash one, the measure has a fiscal light hall pass statement issued and a statement of no revenue impact. Mr. Chair, this measure, of course, does have a request from LFO that the measure be referred, that an additional the addition of a ways and means referral be added, Mr. Chair.
All righty. Colleagues, this bill and a companion or similar bill, Senate Bill 952, were both having to deal with the reorganization of the Department of Energy. We were kind of, the chair was kind of hopeful that we would get the House amendments and be able to work on their bill, but for whatever reason, they seem to want to move theirs down through rules, so I suggest we do likewise. We have really hadn't had a chance to work this bill. And
are we taking sides as to which one is more important, 908 or 952?
We're going to move them both. My intent is to move them both.
With recommendation.
Without recommendation.
Without recommendation.
Without recommendation.
All right. Well,
no, they got due pass on them.
And, huh?
They had due pass recommendation.
Oh.
And you move them without.
Let's move them without recommendation. Because we didn't work them, really.
Okay.
And we need to adopt the dash ones to both as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We're ready to go.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 908.
Senator Thompson's moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 908. Discussion. Seeing none, the dash ones are adopted. I should have asked if there's any opposition. Seeing none, there's...
Well, it was your bill. Why
I know, what could
that?
I say?
I move Senate Bill 908 with the dash one without recommendation to rules.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 908 as amended by the dash one to the Rules Committee.
I just have a comment. And that is, I really think that we need to look at the Oregon Energy Commission.
Look at what?
I think that what both of these bills are trying to do, I'd like to underscore my support for that there needs to be some, we need oversight and we need to look at what they're doing down there.
I agree.
Okay. So I really would have preferred to do both of them with a due pass, but or as recommended. But I'll be happy to go along with the committee.
Okay.
So Mr. Chair,
I sure as heck don't want to be a no vote. You know.
Yeah.
Just for clarification, the recommendation on that motion was without recommendation.
Without recommendation to rules.
Okay.
Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, we'll close on that. There's no opposition.
Okay.
And we'll go ahead and take up, we'll open on Senate Bill 952, which is the same similar bill, and we'll do the same thing.
Go ahead.
Go.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 952.
Senator Thompson's moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 952. Discussion on that. Is there any opposition to that? Seeing none, the dash ones are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move the Senate Bill 952 with a dash one amendment to rules without recommendation.
Senator Thompson's moved Senate Bill 952 as amended by the dash ones to the Committee on Rules without recommendation. Same comment, Senator, I assume?
Pretty much.
Pretty much. We got it down. Okay. Any further discussion on that? Is there any opposition? The motion is adopted. All right, now we'll move back up to
936.
We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 936.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 936. We heard on March 27th, this measure sets incremental increases in the taxable portion of value of eligible project property under the Strategic Investment Program and eliminates the difference in taxation of projects in urban and rural areas. The measure increases the cap of the community service fee from $2 million to $2.5 million and eliminates $500,000 cap for projects in rural areas. This measure would take effect the first 91st day, following a term of sine die. We have also received, Mr. Chair, the Dash 1 Amendment. The Dash 1 Amendment modifies the taxable portions of real market value for eligible projects as follows: $100 million for projects in non-rural areas or in rural areas, $25 million for projects with total cost up to $500 million, $50 million for projects with total cost up to $1 billion, or $100 million for projects with total cost exceeding $1 billion. With the Dash 1 Amendment, Mr. Chair, this measure would have a fiscal statement that's been issued, and a revenue light statement has also been issued, Mr. Chair. this measure came to us with a referral to the Committee on Finance and Revenue, so that's where the measure should be going after we move the bill.
Finance and Revenue or the Tax Committee?
Yeah, this measure has a subsequent referral to Finance and Revenue.
Finance and Revenue. Yes. Oh, okay. Senator Thompson?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 Amendment to Senate Bill 936.
Senator Thompson's moved the Dash 1 Amendments to Senate Bill 936.
Yeah, that's great.
Discussion?
They haven't killed everybody.
No discussion? Is there any opposition? The Dash 1s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 936 with a Dash 1 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 936 as amended by the Dash 1 Amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. Discussion on the motion. Any opposition to the motion? Motion is adopted. All righty, now flip the sheet over. We'll open work session on Senate Bill 974.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So Senate Bill 974 prohibits persons other than retail customers of vehicle dealers from making a claim against a vehicle dealer under certain circumstances. We heard this bill on the 29th of March. Since then, we have received the Dash 2 Amendment. The Dash 2 Amendment makes several changes and increases the required bond amount for motorcycle, moped, and ATV dealers from $2,000 to $10,000 and increases the required bond amount for standard dealers from $40,000 to $50,000. Requires the maximum amount available under the bond for persons other than retail customers from $20,000 to $10,000. It specifies that non-retail customers must have a bond or letter of credit of at least $10,000 to make a claim on the bond, and specifies that non-retail customers from other jurisdictions must be permitted to file a claim against the dealer bond in their jurisdiction or file again on one in this jurisdiction. The Dash 2 Amendment prohibits non-retail customers from making a claim against the bond of a motorcycle, moped, or ATV-only dealer. And the Dash 2 finally also prohibits the Department of Transportation from issuing new dealer certificates for persons to deal exclusively in motorcycles. With the Dash 2 Amendment, Mr. Chair, this measure has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 Amendment to Senate Bill 974.
Senator Thompson has moved the Dash 2 Amendments to Senate Bill 974. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion? The motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 974 with a Dash 2 Amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson's moved Senate Bill 974 as amended by the Dash 2 Amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? There is none. Motion is adopted. Carrier? Someone, Senator Riley, would you like to carry that one?
Sure.
All righty. We're closed on that. Now we'll move down to two PUC bills. We'll open a work session, on Senate Bill 978. Patrick?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 978, this is a measure we heard back on April 5th. Prohibits electric companies from including in their rates the cost of electric generation resource or energy storage resource that is capable of generating electricity, storing electricity for not less than 5 years, et cetera, et cetera. I should just go ahead and skip forward, Mr. Chair, to the Dash 3 Amendment, which is a replacement to the original measure. The Dash 3 Amendment directs the Commission to establish a public process for investigating how developing industry trends, technologies, and policy drivers impact the existing regulatory system and incentives currently used by the Commission. It outlines issues for consideration in that investigation and directs the Commission to explore changes to existing regulatory system, and then requires the Commission to provide an opportunity for public comment and to report to the interim legislative committees by September 15th, 2018. The Dash 2 Amendment sunsets the measure on January 2nd, 2019. With the Dash 3 Amendment, Mr. Chair, we have received a fiscal light statement and a statement of no revenue impact. This measure has been requested by the Legislative Fiscal Office to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Oh, really?
Mr. Chair.
All righty. Colleagues, this is one where the electrical business is changing a lot, and I think the interest was to try and open it up a little bit more and recognize that changes are taking place, where there's more interest in by a number of customers in getting some green power, and there's also a sense that the rate-making process is probably going through an evolutionary change. I've talked some with the commission chair and staff about this, and I think they agree to that. They probably could do this on their own, but this is just to give them a little encouragement to get on with it and address a lot of the concerns that both customers and utilities have raised. So that's what this does, is kind of encourage them to get it going.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 978.
Senator Thompson has moved the DAS 3 amendments to Senate Bill 978. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 978 with the DAS 3 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 978 as amended by the Dash 3 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator. Discussion.
What I'd like to comment on actually is Senate Bill 979, which you're not going to open and vote. But I really think that this whole theater needs to be opened up. We've given them a huge amount of money in the last session, and I think that it's only fair that other people be able to compete. And so I would have liked to have seen Senate Bill 979 move as well.
I'll comment on that in a minute. Anybody else?
You can't comment on it unless you open it.
I can just watch.
Power of the gavel. I'm shaking in my booties.
Under the amendment or under the
matrix? We are under the, we've called the final question, Mr.
We've
Chair,
called the final question. So is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition? All righty. Senate Bill 978, as amended by the Dash 3s, moved for adoption with subsequent referral Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion on the motion further? Is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition? Other than a comment, we will close. It is passed. Now I will comment on 979, at which we're not going to work, is a bill that was intended to open the field a little bit more to others providing electricity to customers who might want green power. That's essentially what it was all about. And a little fear of that the playing field is a little unfair. I have listened to that. I had talked to both the commission staff and to the chair of the commission about that. We passed a bill called the Voluntary Renewable Portfolio back in 2013, I believe, which had some issues that had to do with proved to be not as workable because of what's called the transition charges on that thing. With the bill that we passed in the last session, 1547, I think that field has changed a lot, particularly as you're talking about new loads with people coming on. And the commission chair has assured me that they see that change and want to encourage be supportive for economic development of people coming in and are willing to take a look at that and perhaps take a little more supportive look than they have in the past. I think that's good. What I told Commissioner Hardy is that we would let them do their job, and if it didn't quite seem like it was going on that way, that we would be back in about 8 months and we would take another look at it. So I think the message we want to send to companies that are looking to Oregon as a place to do business and do green power is that we are indeed open for that. I think we're open to it in a sense of providing equal opportunity for both the utilities and third parties to provide that coverage, and the regulatory field should be pretty level. I hate to use that term. You've all heard me talk about what a level playing field looks like. But as level as we can get it, the real issue there is how to deal with the transition charges and what those are. The issue on transition charges, so you guys who are not as familiar, is you don't want to let somebody leave the utility and then leave a major charge behind as being unfair and throwing that on the shoulders of the other customers. So there's a balancing act that I think the commission is probably in a far better position to deal with and than we are as a legislature. But we'd take another look later. So that's why we're not doing that now. But I understand Senator Rod's comments, and I have strong feelings along the same lines, although not negative towards any one party. All righty. So we'll move on then. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 980.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 980, we heard this on March 29th. The measure was dealing with motor vehicle manufacturers, distributors, and importers reimbursing dealers for services related to vehicle recalls. Since the time we heard this bill, we've received a Dash 2 amendment. The Dash 2 amendment is a rewrite of the original bill, which replaces, directs manufacturers to compensate franchisees as provided for in ORA 650.158 for all labor and parts the manufacturer requires to be used to perform repairs on vehicles subject to the recall. It specifies prorated compensation rate of at least 1.5% of used vehicles held by a dealer awaiting parts for recall under specified circumstances, not to exceed the valuation of the used vehicle subject to the recall. It provides exceptions in cases where a national compensation program provides equal or greater compensation to the and also prohibits manufacturers from reducing compensation through chargebacks or removal of franchisee from an incentive program. With with the Dash 2 amendment, Mr. Chair, this measure has no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
All righty. I think the last time we dealt with this, Mr. Berry and Mr. Cosgrove, we asked to go off and take a look at it and see if we can come up with compromise. I am unclear exactly where the Dash 2 is, so if I just, Bill, if you and Paul or you want to comment on those before we vote.
Do you want to try first?
Mr. Chair, Paul Cosgrove, representing the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers. As you see, the Dash 2 is a gut of the bill and a rewrite of the bill to deal with a whole lot of technical amendments that were mentioned during the hearing. And those language problems have been satisfactorily resolved. The parties got closer, and the figures in the amount of money to be given to dealers if and the time period when that money will start to be paid is not particularly our desire. It is closer to our desire. I think that's the best way for me to state that.
Bill Perry, the Oregon Auto Dealers Association. Thank you, Chair Beyer. Yes, I would say that I think the committee members had asked us to try to get to some sort of a compromise, and I think both of us are less opposed to the original positions than we were before. So hopefully this is a lot closer and achieved what you guys were after, and so for the most part, I think this is a good way to move forward. So
you're okay with the Dash? Are you saying you're supportive of the Dash 2s? Yes. You're both... All that aside, you're both supportive of the Dash 2s.
Yes.
Paul Cosgrove again, we much prefer the Dash 2s to the original bill, so yes.
Yes.
They're both unhappy, okey-dokey. So it must be okay.
Good when people are happy.
I think they just accused us of making sausage.
Oh. We got happy people here. So.
Looks like it. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 980.
Senator Thompson's moved the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 980. Discussion on that motion. Is there any opposition to that motion? The Dash 2s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 980 with the Dash 2 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson's moved Senate Bill 980 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on that? Don't see any. Is there any opposition to that?
I'm going to oppose.
You're going to vote no?
Yeah. That way I don't have to carry it.
That's never stopped us before.
The motion is adopted. Senator Thompson in opposition. Did you want to carry that bill? Senator Gerard, would you carry it?
Sure.
Oh, I guess you're going
to... I'd be very happy to carry that bill.
You will. Okay. So we're closed on that. We will open on Senate Bill 982. This one is your bill.
Yeah, you're gonna stuff this.
All right. So, Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 982 regulates the business relationship between equipment suppliers and equipment dealers. We have received a Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment changes the prescribed effective date to the, and to an emergency clause rather than the 91st day following a German sign to die, modifies definitions in Section 1, modifies language regarding dealer agreement, application to multiple dealer business locations, purchase of all or substantially all of a supplier's inventory, intellectual property, and goodwill, termination of dealer agreement, suppliers disapproving a dealer request on sale or transfer of a dealership, heirs of family members of individuals with controlling interest in single-line dealers, changing business locations without prior supplier approval, credit due to dealer accounts following termination of dealer agreements, dividing costs of returning equipment to parts to supplier following dealer agreement That's termination. Fine. Mr. Chair, I believe I've read all that, and now Senator Thompson is going
to
make
Senator
some comments.
Senator, we had asked Senator Thompson to do a work group on this one. So, Senator, what's your recommendation?
I don't know if it was you that recommended that.
You volunteered,
Senator
actually,
Girard volunteered me to do the work group.
I did,
I think
too.
That was Senator Girard said, Senator Thompson should do a work group, and you volunteered.
Seniority has its benefits in this building, that I found out.
So what is your recommendation now that you've had a work group?
Don't be in a committee with Senator Girard anymore. No, just kidding. We had... It was a good work group. We had three meetings. We got a hold of I met people from all over the country, Texas, Washington, D.C. We looked at some models that these two groups had worked to try to get an agreement in other states, like Oklahoma and Texas. I found out that there's a lot of, even though they have these groups all over the country, every state is different the way they look at these things. So we didn't have enough time to come up with an agreement that we could kind of copy from another state. So both groups have agreed to work on the rest of the year at this thing, and perhaps at one of our legislative days we can have them in for a meeting and get an update from them. And they both agreed to raise their hands to say that they're both all willing to wave our hands and that they're in agreement to keep working at it.
So we'll see this again in 2018.
Senator Girard hopefully won't put me on the next work group.
Aren't you chairing the one in the interim?
Yes.
We'll close on that one.
I didn't agree to that.
No. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 985.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 985, we heard on April 5th, rather, it exempts insurers that transact specified classes of commercial insurance from the requirement to file rates or policy forms. We have since received a -1 amendment. The -1 amendment is on OLIS, and in your packets, it specifies that the exemption applies to inland marine insurance coverage specified by the director, removes the travel risk insurance from the exemption list, clarifies exemption for highly protected commercial property, authorizes the director to exempt any other commercial lines of insurance coverage for large commercial policyholders that meet the premium threshold and other requirements. It exempts all commercial automobile liability insurance for projects defined in ORS 737.602, and service contracts defined in ORS 646A.154. It modifies authorities and duties of the director regarding the program and allows surplus line brokers to purchase insurance from any eligible non-admitted insurer. With the -1 amendment, Mr. Chair, this measure has no fiscal or revenue impact.
All righty. Paul, you look like you wanted to comment.
Mr. Chair, Paul Cosgrove, representing the American Insurance Association. Just to mention, your staff went through what the -1 does. It significantly narrows the bill. We've had discussions with the department. I think the department, if you call them up, because I just had this conversation with them, will say that they are interested in continuing this discussion. There may be additional changes that need to be made on the Senate side, or excuse me, on the House side. And that's because what we're trying to do is narrow this down so it only affects the kinds of commercial policies that are purchased by big business. And I think see by the amendment and the description by your staff, a number of lines in the bill were eliminated, a number of lines were expressly excluded, and a number of them were made at the discretion of the department director, so, or the insurance commissioner. So that's where we are. I urge adoption of -1.
All righty. Senator.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 to Senate Bill 985.
Senator Thompson has moved the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 985. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? -1s are adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 985 with a dash one amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 985 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? The motion is adopted. Is there anyone wants to carry that? Was that a yes?
Okay.
Senator Monroe wishes to carry. We'll close on that. We will open on Senate Bill 989.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 989 is the measure that we heard on March 27th that directs the Travel Information Council to make additional roadside rest areas, to manage additional roadside rest areas along interstate and state highways, and directs the council to develop a transition plan with ODOT and with the State Parks and Recreation Department and to report to the Interim Legislative Committees on Transportation regarding the transition plan by September 15th, 2018. The measure becomes operative on the 2nd of January 2019. We have a dash one amendment which makes several changes to that list of rest areas. It removes the following rest areas for management by the Travel Information Council: the Siskiyou Welcome Center at I-5 milepost 12, JB Harris Highway 16 milepost 51, Klein Falls State Park Highway 126 milepost 108, Summer Lake State Highway 31 milepost 69, Casey State Park State Highway 62 milepost 29, Tubbs Springs Wayside State Park State Highway 66 milepost 19, Nesquin State Park on US 101 milepost 98, Boiler Bay State Park at US 101 milepost 126, Driftwood State Park on US 101 milepost 153, Ophir Wayside State Park on US 101 milepost 319, Brothers Oasis on US 20 milepost 43, Sage Hen on US 20 milepost 114, Buchanan Springs on US 20 milepost 156, Bandit Springs on US 26 milepost 49, Government Camp on US 26 milepost 54, Bradley State Park on US 30 milepost 75, and Carter on US Highway 97 milepost 282. With that, Mr. Chair, the measure has a statement of fiscal impact, which has been posted to Olson's in your packet, and a statement of no revenue impact. I will mention, Mr. Chair, that there have been discussions with Senator Boquist, who recommended and has been approved by the Senate President, should the committee decide to do so, that this measure be referred to the Committee on Joint Transportation Preservation and Modernization.
Okay. Senator.
You want to send this to that?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four.
Oh, I mean dash one.
I know. I move the dash one to Senate Bill 989.
Senator Thompson has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 989. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Okay, the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 989 with the dash one amendment with a due pass recommendation and a request to refer to the Joint Transportation Committee.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 989 as amended by the dash one amendments to the floor with a due pass with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Transportation, Modernization, and Preservation.
Close enough.
Yes, Senator.
I like the bill. I don't understand why we're sending it down. I sit on that committee, and what we're going to come up with is going to be so convoluted. I think it has a better chance to survive if it went directly to the floor.
Well, there was a suggestion that it might be part of the transportation bill.
But why?
Further discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? The motion is adopted, and that was the whole thing, isn't it? So we'll close on that. Now, let's see. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 990.
Okay. So Senate Bill 990 exempts small modular reactors from certain siting restrictions that apply to nuclear-fueled thermal power plants. It requires small modular reactors to be sited in a city or county where electors have approved of small modular reactors being located. Requires emergency planning zones for small modular reactors to be located in a county where the electors have approved of their location. It requires proposed disposal of high-level radioactive waste by small modular reactors to comport with the process approved or adopted by the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission. There's no amendment to this bill, Mr. Chair. It has a minimal fiscal impact and statement of no revenue impact.
It's a long-term deal. It's affectionately known as nukes in a box.
How much were those? I forgot. How much did they say that was for, like, 50 megawatts?
I
know, but how much dollar-wise?
Oh, I forget the number.
It doesn't matter. It's
about half the cost of a regular nuclear plant, a little less than half the cost. That's the projection. Of course, this is probably something that wouldn't happen for 10, 15 years. It's out there ways. Okay, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 990 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson moves Senate Bill 990 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? I see none. Senate Bill 990 is moved to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation,
Boquist,
a unanimous vote, and Senator Boquist will carry. So we'll close on that, and we're down to the last one. We're open on work session on Senate Bill 1044.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 1044 is the bill we heard last week. It specifies several things related to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Since we heard that bill last week, we have received a Dash 3 amendment, which was supposed to be all-inclusive of every change that needed to happen to this. I will go over those, Mr. Chair. Clarifies that monies from retail sale of distilled liquor held by an agent are not subject to ORS 295-001 to 295-108 if the agent has an amount on deposit that the commission deems to be reasonable and sufficient, not less than the average daily gross receipts of liquor retail liquor sales by the agent. It allows the commission to require mandatory... I'm sorry. I will strike that. It permits homemade beer, wine, and fermented juices to be donated to nonprofit and charitable organizations for sale at auction, and adds an emergency clause. I struck that last because the thing I was about to say, Mr. Chair, which was to allow the mandatory training for findings of administrative violations due to error by a staff person who's holding his hand up, did not make it into that amendment. So it just includes those three changes that I listed. OLCC, I believe, will pursue an amendment to that extent on the House side moves there. In the meantime, the amendment, the Dash 3 before us, has a minimal fiscal impact and a minimal revenue impact.
All righty. Senator.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 1044.
Senator Thompson has moved the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1044. Discussion. Seems like there's no discussion. Is there any opposition? There's no opposition. They are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1044 with the Dash 3 amendment to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 1044 as amended by the Dash 3 amendments to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion.
Senator? I was curious as to why this didn't have a referral to the Transportation Committee.
Oh, that was a low blow.
Well, you know, driving and drinking.
Just
make him carry it.
No.
Is there any further discussion? Is there any serious discussion? Is there any opposition? All righty. Senate Bill 1044, as amended by the Dash 3s, is moved to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation, and the chair will carry. We're done. Closed on that, and we are closed. We are done with Senate bills for the session.
And, Mr. Chair, you want to mention, clarify, not meet on Wednesday?
Oh, yes. We will not meet on Wednesday.
Darn.
We'll take that one off, and then Monday we will start in on House bills, and we do have a slew of them.
Yeah.